The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Emerging UU congregation in Atlanta's West End. He is also the transportation and spiritual outreach coordinator for Freedom University, an underground freedom school for undocumented students in Atlanta. Reverend Rogers serves on the Georgia Advisory Committee for the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights and is a founding board member for the New Sanctuary Movement of Atlanta. He lives in Decatur with his wife, Dr. Annie Massard, and three dogs, and enjoys working in the garden while listening to Dungeons & Dragons podcasts. Shout out. So on behalf of Reverend Rogers, our Director of Religious Exploration, Lexi Brown, Music Director Alex Peach, my fellow worship associates, our wonderful choir, as well as the dedicated technical team that is making today's live stream possible, I would like to welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation, which we lovingly call Human. We are a liberal faith community with a mission to nurture our spirit, strive for justice, and transform the world. No matter who you are, whom you love, or where you are on your spiritual journey, you're welcome here. Welcome. We're glad you are here. Please feel free to scan the QR code on the back of your printed order of worship or the code located at the greeters table in the foyer to get in touch with us. All ages are welcome in this service. There is a fidget shelf for children of all ages in the back of the sanctuary, and nursery care is available. Religious exploration for children and youth takes place today at 11:15 in Discovery Hall. The schedule for the next several weeks is in your printed order of worship. Today's second hour adult enrichment offerings are also listed. Lunch ministry meets after second hour, departing Human around 12:15. Please see the whiteboard in the lobby for this week's location. The next Common Grounds Coffee House will be Saturday, March 16th. It's coming up. Doors open at 7, $5 suggested donation at the door, cash only. Come support Human and local area musicians right here in our sanctuary. Bring some extra cash to tip the performers and four treats from the kitchen. And we have another announcement from Miguel Flores.
Hi, everyone. My name is Miguel Flores, and this past year I signed the book and became a member of this congregation. Finally, of course, I'd already been coming to Human for years, and I'd made strong connections with so many of our members. I was already a member of our Heroic live stream team, and I had helped plan some events with other people in our congregation. Nevertheless, I dragged my feet for a long time on joining for real, and by that I mean signing a stewardship form. One of the events that really changed my perspective about pledging to Human happened last year. As I'm sure many of you are aware, our sanctuary experienced some water damage last year. During that time, we moved our worship space to Fellowship Hall. And as a member of the live stream team, I remember one Saturday coming in to help set up wiring and cabling for the microphones and speakers we would need for service in Fellowship Hall. I remember so much energy and activity and urgency those first couple weeks in our temporary sanctuary as we scrambled to figure out how to do sound and video in such a different environment. For me, it was really inspiring to see the room fill up completely in the minutes before service, and I distinctly remember some of our newest members first visited us during that time. It made me appreciate how much our community cares about staying connected and sharing our message. Even during COVID, when we couldn't meet in person for a long time, many of us collaborated to create virtual services that we could tune into, and for a time, we even live-streamed services where only the worship team was present in the sanctuary. All those behind-the-scenes efforts made Human one of the most unshakable things in my life that I've come to rely on for inspiration and support in the years since. Stewardship is about more than just keeping the lights on, whether it's signing up for the brew crew, singing in the choir, or filling out a stewardship pledge form. There's so many ways to contribute so we can continue to share our values, raise our voices, and simply see each other week after week after week. So consider pledging this year. Thanks.
Good morning. I am Reverend Jonathan Rogers, and I am so happy to be here, excited to be here, grateful to be with y'all on this Daylight Savings morning brought to you by coffee. Yeah. It is your presence here this morning that consecrates this holy space we will share in worship this morning. Before I offer our call to worship words, I wanted to add just one brief announcement regarding Freedom University, which I am the transportation coordinator for, as Greg mentioned. Reverend Dunn and I have been affiliated with Freedom University since we got arrested on their behalf back in 2019. And Reverend Dunn last year was one of our volunteer drivers, which is what we need help with for the next 2 months between now and May 11th. If you're able, we could really use another couple drivers because the Georgia police and some of the county and municipal police in the areas that our students come from have begun setting up checkpoints in heavily Latino areas to ask folks for their papers or whatever the legal justification might be for questioning their immigration status. So our undocumented neighbors really need us to step up for the next couple of months. If you're at all able and can contribute some time on Saturday afternoons, we'd be extremely grateful for your assistance. Classes are 3 to 5 p.m. on Saturday afternoons. They take place in downtown Decatur, specific location disclosed if you're able to indeed drive students. It is not a trivial commitment. It certainly takes a chunk of your Saturday, but the need is imminent, and it's a short, defined period of time, like I said, just these next 8 weeks, and it is an extremely rewarding experience. One of the students that Reverend Dunn drove last year and that I had gotten to know as well this year is a freshman on a full ride scholarship at Oglethorpe. And so helping students to access Freedom University makes a huge difference in their lives and futures. Feel free to come talk to me after the service if this is something that you can help with. And thank you so much. Our call to worship words this morning are by Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt, who is president of the Star King School for Ministry. By no means are we Unitarian Universalists perfect. We often fail as much as we succeed. Yet even when, as the hymn goes, we have broken our vows 1,000 times, we return to this essential work of justice and liberation for all. We do the work best when we remember what church is and what it is not. Church is not a place to hide. It is not the place to get away from the world. It is not a place where we get to pretend that the lives that we live and our particular situations are not terribly complex, often confusing, and sometimes depressing. Church is the place where we stand with one another, look the world in the eye, attempt to see clearly, and gather strength to face what we see with courage and, yes, with joy. And now let us light our chalice together.
We light this chalice today as a people dedicated to personal growth. May it burn away the oppressions we have been taught and glow instead with the humility of learning. May it reignite our dreams for a better world and kindle our joy for simple living. May its warmth extend out into the forgotten alleyways of exclusion and bring us home to love, to welcoming, and to all the challenges, the questions, and to the blessings of this beautiful path to becoming a beloved community. This is by Reverend Rosemary Bray McNett. Why are we still talking about inclusivity and diversity when we have done so little to make them real? Why are we still looking pained about the lack of diversity in the denomination? Because diversity, inclusivity, is terribly hard, terribly uncomfortable, definitely unsettling, and often quite frustrating. What I know about being inclusive, crossing from culture to culture, learning the language of diversity, is that it's the work of a lifetime. It's hard to accept people who are not like you, who don't talk the way you do, or believe the things you believe, or dress or vote as you do. It's even harder to appreciate them for the things about them that are not like you, to find them interesting and fun, to enjoy the learning that's part of the experience, and to acknowledge, finally, that you may have to agree to disagree. The truth is, if there is no justice, there will be no peace. We can read Thoreau and Emerson to one another, quote Rilke and Alice Walker and Howard Thurman, and think good and noble thoughts about ourselves. But if we cannot bring justice into the small circle of our own individual lives, we cannot hope to bring justice to the world. And if we do not bring justice to the world, none of us is safe, and none of us will survive. Nothing that Unitarian Universalists need to do is more important than making justice real here, where we are. Hard as diversity is, it is our most important task.
Part of a living spiritual tradition. Mornings like this, one can't help but feel the vitality, energy, our collective engagement with the eternal and ongoing conversation with the spirit of the universe. A living tradition is one of learning and growth. Our Unitarian Universalist congregations and association, denomination, have adopted or are in the process of adopting an eighth principle, which states that we covenant to affirm and promote journeying toward spiritual wholeness by building diverse, multicultural, beloved community through our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppression. Wow, what a goal. What a project. How ambitious. To dismantle racism that systemically devalues non-white lives. Racism that says bodies of color are disposable. Racism that tries to convince us that it's okay for human rights only to apply to people of European descent. How are we to dismantle a force that has raged across the centuries and around the world? To answer this, we must take seriously the call of journeying towards spiritual wholeness, for this is a process that will test and enhance the strength of our individual and collective spirits. Addressing racism requires that we take our fourth principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, to heart, because it is a knot we cannot disentangle without holding ourselves responsible to look directly at our country's racist history. Property rights over black bodies were enshrined into colonial laws over a century before the United States even declared independence. Author and activist Bree Newsom writes, "Chattel slavery was constructed around laws that legalized the raping of black women and the selling of their children. Rape of black women was so pervasive that the prevalence of mixed race children posed a threat to white supremacy and the slave system. Were the children of white fathers and enslaved black mothers slave or free? English law had traditionally held that children inherited status and titles from their fathers. This custom was specifically changed in America to accommodate the growth of slavery." Newsom is describing a 1662 Virginia slave law that made it so children born of enslaved mothers inherited their mother's slave status, regardless of whether the father was a slave or, as was often the case, a free white slave owner. The law stated, quote, "Whereas some doubt has arisen whether children got by any Englishman upon a Negro woman should be slave or free, be it therefore enacted and declared by this grand assembly that all children born in this country shall be held bond or free only according to the condition of the mother." Chattel slavery continued, of course, for another 200 years. Attempts to overthrow it as a system were met with some of the most torturous reprisals the human mind could ever possibly concoct. With so much misery inflicted on the lives of slaves on a day-to-day, generation-to-generation basis, the only way to suppress revolt was to make sure that the consequences of disobedience were even more hellish than the reality of slave life. The life expectancy, for example, for slaves in New Orleans was 7 years. 7 years, the lowest in the country at that time, due to the brutality of life on a sugar plantation. Not coincidentally, Louisiana had the most violent and inhumane history of repressing slave revolts. Throughout the South, slaves were exploited not only for their surplus labor value, but for the value of their bodies as commodities as well. Much of the economic infrastructure of 18th and 19th century America was built on loans taken out with the bodies of slaves as capital. In 1865, the government passed the 13th Amendment, which ended slavery and involuntary servitude, but with one very important exclusion, which is as punishment for a crime. The devil's in the details, am I right? And boy, howdy, was that loophole widened into an expressway. Andrew Johnson was president during the Reconstruction era in the post-Civil War times, and he was one of the most cowardly and racist presidents that we have ever had, and that is a competitive category. In the absence of a federal enforcement of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, the exploitation and terrorization of Black Americans continued for yet another century. Another round of federal legislation arose in the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, and yet that old loophole loomed large. Not only did incarceration turn out to be a very effective means of repressing Black radical urban revolts in the 1970s, but there was a lot of money to be made in locking up over a million people who could be legally forced into involuntary servitude. You know who still does a substantial proportion of the brutal and deadly work of harvesting and processing sugar in Louisiana? That's right, the prison population, which is two-thirds Black, despite white people being the majority in Louisiana. The more things change, the more, unfortunately, they stay the same. Looking back at the legislative history of our country, from the Virginia slave laws to the loophole in the 13th Amendment, looking back at our economic history, from the extensive exploitation of plantation labor to the use of prison labor, there is one force that these histories invariably serve, and one force that has always exacerbated the division and exploitation for its own perpetuation: a free and responsible search for truth and meaning requires that we call out its name, which is capitalism. We cannot root out systemic racism if we do not overcome capitalism. Chattel slavery would not have been possible without literal laws that changed inheritance based on racist logic. It was a system that could only be justified by dehumanizing its Black victims. The brutal torture and economic exploitation that kept slavery going for centuries would not have been possible where liberty and justice for all actually existed. It was only through depriving people of their rights based on the color of their skin that these actions could be justified. Imprisoning 1.2 million Americans to do involuntary servitude isn't in keeping with how we see ourselves as a country today. But enough of the population is willing to look the other way because most of its victims are Black, and Americans have relied on the exploitation of Black bodies for so long that we have become numb to it. Racism has persisted in our nation, not because of individual hatred, but for the sake of justifying the exploitation of Black bodies and labor that capitalism depends on. Capitalism's origins relied on what Marx called primitive accumulation through colonialism, a dispossession of the global South, justified by the dehumanization of non-white populations. Capitalism's constant growth is made possible by technological advancements and the exploitation of surplus labor, and slavery has been the most potent form of exploitation of labor. Today, American hegemony and capitalism depend on a constant influx of underpriced commodities coercively extracted from the lands of the global South via the underpaid and unprotected labor of people of color. Domestic companies here in the U.S. rely on underpaying their workers as well. And they can get away with that because oppressed labor can always be threatened with homelessness and incarceration. And we only put up with homelessness and incarceration because they mostly affect poor and disabled people of color. We've been programmed to see poor folks in America as being punished by God through prosperity gospel and capitalist-informed morality. Racial divisions in our country aren't because we're destined to hate one another on the basis of skin color. They're because causing and exploiting racial divisions is and always has been to the extreme benefit of capital accumulation. If we are serious about dismantling racism, as we have pledged ourselves to do as Unitarian Universalists, we need to overcome the capitalist tendencies that perpetuate racism for the sake of profit. To live a free and responsible truth search for truth and meaning, we need to name and confront the barriers to a world community with justice and liberty for all. We must move away from performative liberalism in favor of a faith of action. Such will not be a simple process. The transition from feudalism to capitalism took hundreds of years and thousands of failed experiments. The transition to superseding capitalism will too. Everywhere I turn in an attempt to live our UU principles, commodification, extraction, and exploitation, the core traits of 21st century capitalism are in the way. We can't live without capitalism yet, but if we can't begin to imagine and enact a world that supersedes capitalism, we'll keep running into those barriers no matter how long and how hard people of conscience try. Once we summon the collective courage to name and confront the barriers to building a better world, our dismantlement of those borders, those barriers, will be unstoppable. We are not interested in the liberal notion of build back better. We do not want to build back. We long to dismantle and build anew, to build with true morality and to build in liberation. Collective liberation requires collective action, and we are spiritually and emotionally and logistically prepared for such action. Yes, we have a lot to learn. We will remain committed to our free and responsible search. We also know that together we are capable of more than we can possibly imagine at any given point in time. I remember as a teenager growing up in Central Maine in the 90s, attending church alongside a longtime local LGBT activist who told us one morning in joys and concerns about how much of a toll the fight for gay rights was taking on her and her family. I can still picture the fatigue and despair on her face standing at the front of the sanctuary that morning. It was so profound that our minister came down from the pulpit to give her a hug, which was something I had never seen in our church before. Then other people began to come forward and join their arms into that hug as well, and to literally lift her up into the air as a community. And as we held her, folks began to gently sway and rock, and we sang, "How could anyone ever tell you? You were anything less than beautiful. How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul." That is a memory that I will never forget, and one that I return to often when I feel overwhelmed by despair and I need courage and reassurance about the state of our movement for collective liberation. It reminds me that because each of us are sacred and none of us are left behind, we can never be defeated, because the flame of our movement is held amongst so many of us. We will always be able to rekindle it when we need to. Several years after this moment of radical love in my home congregation, same-sex marriage became legal in Massachusetts thanks to a legal challenge by UU Hillary Goodridge. In 2015, when the Supreme Court announced that same-sex marriage was legal nationwide, I was at General Assembly in the same room as Ms. Goodridge. To see that transition happen from the unimaginable to the law of the land in less than 20 years, and to be connected with one of the heroes of the campaign through our movement, made me feel like each one of us can and does have a role to play in the movement for collective liberation. UUs are capable of more than we can imagine when we act together. When we collectively commit ourselves to a cause greater than ourselves, when we set aside our individualism for the sake of supporting one another with love's transformative power. As Fidel Castro said of the Cuban Revolution, I began the revolution with 82 men. If I had to do it again, I would do it with 10 or 15 of absolute faith. It does not matter how small you are if you have faith and a plan of action. Y'all, we are people of faith and action. And so while transforming racial capitalism into a new and uncertain mode of governance is as yet difficult to imagine, together we can help move that evolution forward. If we act in faithful and loving community, casting aside bourgeois individualism, we can act collectively to substantially assist in building what will replace capitalist imperialism. We Americans cannot do it alone, but collectively acting for collective liberation here in the imperial core sure would make transcending the brutality of our current reality more doable. This is difficult and demanding work, to say the very least, but that's why we do it in spiritual community. Knowing that the more fully we embrace a free and responsible search for truth and meaning today, the more revealed truth future generations of Unitarian Universalists will have to rely on. Ending racism and its systemic causes is the work of several lifetimes, but it begins with us facing uncomfortable truths and pledging to support one another as we collectively confront their implications. This is deeply spiritual work and requires healthy communities and practices to nourish communal action for collective liberation. It does not matter how small you are if you have faith and a plan of action. We are small, but if we stick together and support one another, we can never be defeated. May it be so. And may we be the ones to make it so.
And now we extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
May we see all as it is, and may it all be as we see it. May we be the ones to make it as it should be, for if not us, who? If not now, when? This is answering the cry of justice with the work of peace. This is redeeming the pain of history with the grace of wisdom. This is the work we are called to do, and this is the call we answer now. To be the barrier and the bridge, to be the living embodiment of our principles, to be about the work of building beloved community, to be a people of intention and a people of conscience.
Thank you, everybody. Go in peace. Have a wonderful week.
The Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia, thanks you for listening to the Human Podcast. Background music, courtesy of Tim Moore from Pixabay.